For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSRcast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance and Metal Injection. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
I have the distinct pleasure here to have Joey Vera on MSRcast. Thank you for coming on the show, man.
Distinctly thank you for having me.
No, distinctly thank you.
No.
You guys haven't been to Houston in a while. I'm excited to see you. I mean, the last time that you guys were here, you got advertised as the Armored Saints from Germany. Do you remember that?
I actually don't remember that part.
I think it was at Fitzgerald. It was in a newspaper.
Oh, at Fitzgerald. Was that the last time we played here? Wow, that was a Revelation tour, I think, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Thunderstorms that night.
Oh, yeah. Weird, all the time here.
Yeah, weird for Houston, right?
So you're on a big tour now. How has this Queensryche tour been going for you guys?
It's going great. We're still just starting the second week, so everybody's still getting their legs on. But we're starting to get into a routine now, and it's been going great. The crowds are awesome. Shows have been great. The guys are awesome. I've been friends with them forever. So it's been really a blast being out with friends on tour. So, it's been going awesome so far.
Any memorable moments you can tell us about the tour so far?
I'm really only 8 shows in at this point, and 2 of them were headline. So nothing too crazy yet. Like I said, we're just still getting our legs, you know, wet at this point. So the interesting, fun stuff will be in the days ahead, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings me to the next question is basically, you guys have had a long and illustrious career. So how do you decide what songs you're going to pick for your set list when, okay, compared to like now you have to do like 8 songs on an opening or when you get to do a headline show?
Well, you know, we always try to play songs from... We try to play songs from every record. We don't always do that, but we usually try to at least play 1 song from each record so that... If you're a fan from day one, at least we'll play 1 song from every record in our catalog. But we have a new record still. Wind Hands Down is, you know, about 1.5 years old. We're still enjoying playing songs from our new record. So we've been playing some deeper cuts than when we first started out. But, you know, it is a little challenging when you're a support act. I mean, we actually have between 45 and 50 minutes to play every night, so some nights we can squeeze in 10 songs, you know. We're actually going to try to do that tonight. We've been normally playing about 9 because one of the songs is a bit long, but we're not playing the long song tonight. But you know, we haven't toured a lot in the States. A lot of these cities that we're playing, we've never played. And a lot of these cities we are playing, such as Houston, haven't been here in a long time. So we try to accommodate, you know, the old school fans. They want to hear the Kenny Delivers. They want to hear the March of the Saints and those sort of things. So we have those in there. And then we have the new record that we want to pump. So we want to play at least 2 or 3 songs from that. And then it's like a matter of like just filling up those extra spots with stuff from our catalog. So, you know, we try to mix it up, a little bit of stuff that people kind of can expect, you know, they expect us to play, but also a few things to help keep it interesting for us, because we don't want to be bored up there playing, you know, all the same songs for the last, all, you know what I mean?
So. Is there a certain song in your catalog that you guys really haven't got to play that you really want to?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. There could be some deep cuts we haven't done in a long time. I always like playing Warzone from Symbol. We haven't played. We used to do that live, but we haven't played that in a long time. Legacy from Raising Fear was always fun to play that back in the day. But that was, I don't know if we could even pull that off. That song's actually pretty difficult to play. But you know, I don't know. There's always stuff that would be interesting.
That brings me up to this point. In the past year, the Big Four, even and also including like Testament and you guys, have all put out brand new albums, including like Anthrax, Metallica, Slayer. What do you think attributes to this longevity of metal now?
Well, I don't know. I think that maybe to some extent we've been through a few cycles already since we started in 82. The popularity, let's say, has risen and fallen a few times. It was big in the early 80s, and then it got horrible with hair metal. And then grunge came and put a nail in it, and that was great. I was ready for that. But then it went underground, and then Pantera and death metal were born in the early 90s. And then there was another resurgence.
It's all cyclical.
Yep. Slayer wrote it. They went kind of underground too, but then Slayer helped bring it back up. And then there was new metal. I don't know. It just keeps going up and down. I just think that, you know, for speaking on behalf of our band and maybe some other bands that are considered sort of legacy bands, that means that's a nice word for old. But I think that the thing that keeps, at least for us, I can't really speak for everybody, but we're the same band. We're all the same band members. We didn't go through member changes. And we really truly enjoy what we're doing, and we have our particular situation is unusual because John was still in Anthrax when we kind of reformed for Revelation in 99. But we kind of made a pact with ourselves, and we said, you know, we're not going to get back into the game of putting out a record, you know, every year and then going on tour for, you know, 14, 18 months or whatever, and knocking our head against the wall trying to expand our career. We're only going to do gigs and make music when we truly feel inspired by it, and we have to continue to have absolute fun doing this. It's not for making money and earning a living. That was secondary, believe it or not, and it sounds crazy maybe, but that was the only way we could actually survive doing this, because it's very hard to be a musician these days, to be in one band and to try to make a living at it.
Even more so now.
So we still have that credo, you know. We just say, you know, if we can make things work financially and be able to, you know, maintain what we do, but also have a good time doing it without it becoming like just a pain in the ass, then we'll do this. This Queensryche tour was not something we anticipated a year ago. We've never toured for 4 weeks in one time since, I can't even remember when.
Right.
Since maybe since Cymbal in the early 90s. So it's been a long time since we've been on tour, so you're catching us in the early part of it. My attitude about this might be different in another 3 weeks.
Right.
But, you know, again, back to the longevity of it, I just think that bands really, such as, even Metallica, I mean, these guys clearly have worked their ass off for all of these years, and they went through took some chances musically here and there along the way. I might tip my hat off to them for that. And they come around, they still enjoy what they do, and they know what fans want to hear from them, and I haven't heard this new record, but so far I think they're being very smart. It's getting great reviews, and it's very smart, but I think that they're just, you know, they seem to be having fun, and that is key.
I've always called Metallica the gateway metal drug.
Yeah.
It gets people like, I like Metallica, maybe I'll see what else is out there, and they start looking for Anthrax and you guys and seeing what else is out there in that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you just, you know, artists got to just keep things honest and be true to themselves. And if you do that, then you will have longevity.
You sort of touched on that next question I had, is what was the, it, what is the main driving force behind the band and making it last so long?
Well, I think it's just that, what I just said. You know, I think it's just the fact that, you know, we've been through a lot of ups and downs, trust me, and my philosophy, my personal philosophy has changed along the way, up and down, different things. I just sort of, you know, like I said, it's a little bit more self-indulgent these days, and we have to sort of do this for ourselves first. And, you know, within realms of the parameter of, you know, I'm not going to make a jazz fusion record just because I want to. You know, I know that our fans have been very dedicated for so long with us. So, you know, we want to celebrate with them what they like about us and then what we think they like about us. So this is why we make the music that we do.
You were able to make a solo album at one point in your career and take a little bit of chance on that.
Yeah, and even with Arm Insane, I mean, we take chances all the time. You know, we've always done that. Our records, we've never made the same record twice, is I guess what I'm trying to say. And this one's no exception, this last one. So part of it is, like, we have to be true to ourselves, make ourselves happy, and then hopefully the fans come along for the ride. And so far, we've been very graced with that they have.
So let's touch a little bit more on When Hands Down, which I fantastic album, really groovy, really catchy.
Cool.
What can you tell me about the making of this album? What is the process for you guys? How long does it basically take to go from concept to completion?
Well, we work pretty much in the demo form these days. It's not like the old days where we get back in a room and jam and, hey, check out this riff I got. You know, it's not like that anymore. It's kind of done in a digital age way. We live in the same city, but LA County is so spread apart that we're pretty far from each other by, well, not really, but by LA traffic standards we are.
We've been there.
Yeah. So we write, usually the music is kind of going through me. I sort of act as a musical director, and anyone that has ideas, it kind of all filters through me. John and I predominantly put these songs together in the end, and the way we do it is we make fairly elaborate demos. I have a small studio at my house, and I do everything there, including program, drum machine, and that kind of stuff. Everybody's parts, the leads, everything. It just goes down as, like, this is the idea for the song, and then along the way, once songs start get their own life, sometimes I'll have the guys come in and say, okay, let's put your lead down, you know, Jeff or Phil. And then Gonzo has the freedom to do his parts when he gets the music. So it just works that way, really. And it starts in a demo form, and it kind of starts like, when you hear the demos, it's almost like a finished product. I mean, it's got overdubs and it's got, you know, production value and stuff like that. Because it's like, this is kind of my vision of the big picture. So here it is, and let's see if we can match it or take it further.
Ever decided to maybe, because there are a lot of bands that will release, like, demo material on, like, a B-side type of stuff?
I never really have thought about that. I really don't like that, personally. If I'm a music fan, I want to hear if I get attached to some recording, I just want to hear that recording. I hate remixes. I hate, you know, demo versions of that. I don't hate it, let's say. If anything, it's interesting for a few minutes, but it's never something I'd put on to listen to.
Right.
You know, I might, if I had a friend over, I'd say, hey man, check out this old Van Halen, you know, demo I have of a song, you know, and it's interesting for 5 minutes, but it's not something I would listen to. So I'm not a huge fan of putting that out.
So let's talk about the live album that's coming up, is Carpe Noctem.
Yeah.
You guys went a little bit different way. You sort of, like, did a little bit of crowdfunding for this release. What led to that decision? How do you think it worked out?
Well, the way it started was we got offered this tour for Queensryche, and we didn't have enough money to do the tour. So we said, I don't know how we're going to do this. It's a great opportunity. And the label came to us and said, what if we did something with Pledge Music, you know, to try to help make up the difference so you can actually break even on this thing. And so originally it started out as that. We were just going to do this EP or this record, and it was only going to be for that, this pledge campaign. It wasn't going to be a full release. It was just to do the tour.
Right.
And it was part of the package, you know. But along the way, so I chose 8 songs, and I started mixing them and stuff. But then along the way during the mix, it was sounding great. And I said, well, shit, this is actually turning out pretty good. Why are we going to limit it to just the Pledge campaign? Why don't we just make this an official release? So it sort of evolved into that. And it was during that part where we said, well, let's make this available for everyone. So we have separate release dates. We have an early release date for people who are involved in Pledge, and then their actual release is February, like late February. It comes out on Metal Blade. But the response has been like completely overwhelmingly amazing, totally way more than we expected. And I think fans are just, I don't know. It's something I've learned along the way, being with Fate's Warning and doing the VIP package thing. Mm-hmm. Fans these days really want to get to know you, and they want to be close to you. They want to know things about you. They want to know. They don't. It's like hearing an interview or reading an interview is not enough these days. They want to come meet you. They want to ask you questions. They want to be involved in everything in any capacity. So that's what this Pledge campaign has afforded a lot of our fans, is a chance to come inside of our world. We've never really opened up ourselves up like that before. So it's been a really eye-opener for us to see. We knew we had a lot of loyal fans out there, but man, this is really like, we've been exposed to some, like the depth of it is just incredible. And it's humbling. I mean, it's super, super humbling.
I know, I pledged, and I've been a big fan for a long time.
Awesome. So. Thank you so much.
So here's a weird question. The other podcast that I do is called Metal Geeks, and we don't only just talk about metal, but we talk about video games and comic books. What do you geek out on?
I'm kind of a food geek. I mean, you know, everyone is pretty aware of the rock star status that a lot of chefs have had in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And I'm one of them. I'm kind of a food nerd. I've always loved cooking as well since forever, 30 years plus. But because of the geekdom of it, mm-hmm. has raised my bar, you know, so I'm always challenging myself as a cook myself. And so when I'm home in L.A. or even when I'm traveling, I'm always like, you know, wherever town I'm in, I'm like, okay, who's the rock star in this town? You know, I'm going to go check out this restaurant, you know, pick up some tips. Or how the hell did he make this couscous, like, taste so amazing?
It's so great when you watch like, one of the shows and they come to some place and you go, I can go there and test out what they just saw on the show.
Yeah,
Do you watch Food Network a lot?
You know, I don't really watch that much TV, but at all. I used to watch it. Food Network back in the day when Emeril was first starting out, and when Mario was first starting out, and that's when I really was watching Food Network, was in the early to mid 90s, and then I kind of just got out of TV for a long time. But lately I've been watching it just, you know, like before I go to bed every night, I'll watch 15 minutes of Chopped, if I can actually turn the TV off, because I'm always like, okay, just 15 minutes. Oh, what's going to happen next? Oh, man, they got eliminated. I can't believe that.
So they're so addicting, right? All the food elimination shows.
Yeah. So, and I hate reality TV. I have to admit that. But that's one of those shows that I just, you know, I kind of get sucked in that. But, so anyway.
This is the part of the show I would love you to be able to program. So if you could pick out a couple bands that really influenced you to get into playing bass, and maybe something new that's out there that you want people to know about.
Some things that got me into playing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Period. Well, that's gonna go way back. So I'll give you kind of a broad stroke of stuff. And this is in no particular order necessarily. I'm going to say Earth, Wind, and Fire, Gratitude. It's a great record, and I love Verdeen White as a bass player. I was gravitating towards Verdeen before I even learned how to play bass. So, but the long-lasting impact on me, a big Earth, Wind, and Fire fan. Also, Sly and the Family Stone, Larry Graham, and then Black Sabbath, Geezer Butler. I mean, you pick any Sabbath record, doesn't matter, any Black Sabbath. And then I'll say Rush. Probably the biggest impact for me is All the World's a Stage, the live record. Geddy Lee's just amazing, big influence there. John Paul Jones from Zeppelin, Name Any Record, he's just, again, amazing. And then I got started getting into jazz a little bit. Jaco Pastore was probably the first guy who really flipped me on my head. Huge Jaco fan. A little bit later, Marcus Miller. Along the way, that's just me as a player. And as a fan of music, I mean, I listen to so much stuff. I mean, I could go on for an hours about all the stuff I like and listen to. But there's a band that I've just discovered literally 2 weeks ago called Wolfpack from Michigan. It's German for wolf pack, I think. Wolf Pack. And they're on a small indie label, just this kind of collective. These guys that are, I don't know much about them, but what I gathered were there's a collective out of Michigan art school, I think, or a music school, I think. Anyway, these guys are, they just get together and they're like this sick rhythm section, but they all play different instruments. And so they, some of their songs have singing in it, and it's actually really good, but the bass player in that band is like amazing.
It's hard to source it out.
Kind of from a Jaco kind of school, but the music's a little wacky. Some of it's like super frivolous and sort of wacky and goofy, and some of it's just down and dirty, funky, like the Meters. That's been my latest discovery.
We'd like to do something for you. It's on our Fly By Night album. This is called Anthem.
Thank you.
Next question. What is the difference between playing bass now compared to when you were first coming up?
For me personally?
Yes, sir.
Well, hopefully I'm a little better. It's funny about bass for me. I actually started on guitar. I wanted to be my goal was to be a rhythm guitar player. I didn't want to be a lead guitar player. I wanted to be a rhythm guitar player. So I wanted to be like Paul Stanley, mm-hmm. Malcolm Young. You know, that's all I wanted to do. But I switched over to bass fairly early. I think I was 16 when I started playing bass, and it was a supernatural progression. It came to me really naturally, and I think I was really good from the get-go. I had a really good ear, never studied in the beginning. But, you know, my playing has evolved. I've always been a finger player. But what really changed me was getting into Jaco. That's really what changed, I think. That was a big turning point for me, and that was about 1978 or 9. And I had only been playing for 3 years, so right early on, I really, that was a big pivotal point. You know, the way that I play is a lot of it comes from what I learned from Jaco, just listening to him. And the other part of it's just the blues part, Geezer Butler, John Paul Jones. That's really where my heart is. I'm just a blues player, really. I'm not a jazz player. I'm really a blues player. But, you know, and then along the way, I probably was fairly stagnant, other than being maybe getting faster at what I did. You know, going through the thrash years, but when I was when I left Armored Saint, when Armored Saint disbanded in '92, I started playing with a lot of local musicians in LA, and I got away from metal altogether and hard rock, and I joined this 11-piece Afro-Cuban reggae band, and it had a horn section and keyboards. I don't even know how I got this gig, because I wasn't that guy. But I've always been a well-rounded player. I understood different rhythms, and I could play different things. I could play funk, and I could fake jazz, but I could play some funk. But it was during that period that I really started to, I think, just broaden my songwriting skills and just as learn way more about theory and harmony as far as my instrument was concerned. The guitar player was a jazz guitarist in that band. And I studied with him for a year, took lessons from him, and basically learned harmony and theory from him. And then it was right after that moment when I joined Fate's Warning in '96. Again, that was another thing that just took me to another level, and the songwriting and everything that was going on with Jim Thales and what he was writing completely just was challenging to me, broke out my box, I went outside my comfort zone. And ever since then, they've always challenged me. You know, all the drummers I played with in that band, from Mark Zonder to Portnoy at one point, and Nick DeVirgilio, you know, and now Bobby Jerzombek. I mean, these you gotta be on your game to keep up with these guys. So that has made me just keep elevating. So, I mean, that's been my journey so far.
So you do play in some guitar-driven bands. How do you make sure your bass playing is up there in that mix, and when you're performing live or writing and all that kind of stuff?
Well, when recording, it's not really up to me. It's up to whoever's producing or mixing the record, per se. You know, I think when regards to Armored Saint, I'm usually the acting producer, or I have been in the last few records. So I think that the music that we're writing and the way that I've been perceiving our music in the last 16 years or so has been really rhythm section oriented, you know. So the bass and the guitar and the drums have had sort of this equal, mm-hmm. you know, this sort of equal place to go through, you know. When I'm my involvement with other groups, it's not so much my baby, and it's not something I have an influence on. You know, that's dependent on the producer and the engineer in that world. You know, but with regards to playing, you know, my philosophy is always the same, and that's pay attention to the drummer and the singer. So that's just how I approach any of that.
You have such a versatility to be able to play in all these different bands. How has that affected you as a bass player?
Well, it's made me better. It's made me a better listener. You know, like I said, you really got to pay attention to the other guys in your band. I've played with a lot of people. I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back or anything, but my point is that I've seen a lot of different personalities, and there's a lot of people who kind of play for themselves. They're a little bit selfish, and they only are interested in their parts, and they don't have an ear for the rest of the group. And I've always perceived it as like we're in a group, you know, right. We're a team. So I've always associated my instrument with the drums, particularly the kick drum and the snare drum, and also the lead vocals, because the lead vocal is running the main melody of the song, and then the kick and the drum is the glue for the bottom end, and I need to fit in the middle somewhere. I don't want to step on either one of their toes. So I always look at things as a big picture. You know, the song is the song, and that's the most important thing, not the bass player.
Project that I really wanted to touch upon came out last year, and it was Motor Sister.
Yeah.
Great album, great just rock album.
Cool, thank you.
How did this project come about?
Well, it really did come about out of a birthday party that was thrown for Scott. Scott Ian, it was his 50th birthday party, and his wife Pearl threw this party just for friends and stuff, and she said, we were all fans of this band Mother Superior. We had been going to see them, the LA band, and they'd play in LA, we'd go see them. We became friends with with Jim Wilson and a couple of the other guys. I've even worked with them in some capacity before this. I'd mixed a few songs on several of their records. I mastered two of their records before all this. So we were all friends, and he was going to... She said to Scott, what would be a cool birthday present for you? And he says, you know, I would love to be able to jam with Mother Superior at my birthday party. And she said, So she said, well, why not? Jim's going to come to the party. Why not, you know, let's ask Jim if he would play some songs. We could just set up a drum set, and John Tempesta is going to be there. Joey's going to be there. Why don't we just learn like 5 songs or something? Well, that just kind of snowballed. And he said, well, here's 12 songs. These are my 12 favorite songs that I would like to play. And then it just turned into like, well, why don't we just all learn all these 12 songs? Forget picking from the 12. Let's just do all the 12. So we just did it. We jammed in his little room he has at his house, and there was just only friends there at the parties, not more than 20 people, 25 people or something. And it was like, it was so much fun playing these songs, and just for no reason other than just for fun. That was it. It was just like a blast. Let's just play these rad songs. And then word got out about a week and a half later, as actually someone at Metal Blade, someone called somebody at Metal Blade, and they said, hey, I was at this party the other day, and this, you know, Scott Ian's birthday party, and these guys get up and they played this, you know, they played all these Mother Superior songs. Man, you totally missed out. You should have went to it, and, you know, you should think about putting this thing out as a record. And it's like, what? So then one thing led to another, and it was like so absurd. It was like they didn't even hear the music. And then the guys at Metal Blade said, you know, if you guys want to make a record with this, this sounds like a cool thing and a cool celebration for just fans of Mother Superior, you know, which would be, you know, a little bit underground sort of a thing. And we were like, sure. So they basically gave us a record deal for based on just some party that they heard about that happened.
Is that ever something that would you could play out live a couple shows?
We have played live a few times. We did a couple shows in L.A., we played San Francisco, and then we did Motorboat a year. It was actually last year. And then, you know, we were actually trying to do more dates, but it's tough with Scott's schedule and my schedule and John's schedule and Jim's schedule. I mean, everybody's schedule. It's been hard to pin us down for a length of time. But we, like I said, the way we made this record, too, was we went into a recording studio and we played live just like we did at the party. Everything, there was no overdubs, all the music was just played down live. The only thing that we redid were the vocals, because the vocals we were all in the same room, and there was just too much bleed going through the vocal mics, and it made things too funky. So we ended up redoing the vocals, but other than that, the whole band, it's basically a live record. And so our intention is to do that again and do the same thing, keep the spirit the same way. Jim has something like 14 new songs already, so we just gotta get in the room and work these tunes out, and we want to make another record, but it's just really about finding the time to do it.
So in the past year, you've had 3 albums come out. You had Motor Sister, you had The New Armored Saint, and you had Fate's Warning.
Yeah.
How do you prepare for each separate project?
Well, the Armored Saint thing, you know, was fairly easy, I guess, other than learning stuff that was we haven't played yet. Like, for instance, the song we're not playing it tonight, but we've been playing the song In an Instant from the record, and it's a long song, it's almost 7 minutes, and it's not something we ever actually played together in a room because of the digital way that we write and collaborate. I mean, we did it in the recording studio, but that was the only time. We never actually played it out live or even in rehearsals. So that it's a little challenging doing songs like that, but the Kenny Delivers and the Madhouses and the March of the Saints, those are just like, we don't need to rehearse those anymore.
Right.
You know, Fate's Warning is more of a challenging thing to get ready for because there's a lot going on and a lot to remember. at this point, some of these songs, I've been playing them so long that they're not, you know, like 11th Hour and whatever, Point of View. A lot of those songs I've been playing for so long that they're not so challenging anymore. But it's the new stuff that's challenging. We have a new record, Theories of Flight, just came out in July. Great stuff on it. But again, I need to find out what songs we're playing. I don't know yet. We're going out in July. I'm sorry, in January. We start in Europe coming up in 17. So I'm going to have to go back to my drawing board, figure out what I played, how I played it. So that's more challenging getting ready for, you know. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yep.
So I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know you got a show to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But what's next for Joey Vera?
Well, we are still, you know, just starting this tour, so I'm just trying to get through the next 3 weeks with some sanity and my sense of humor intact. And we're looking forward to the release of the live record. It comes out digitally for the pledgers. They get it in right before Christmas. And then right after that, I got to get ready for the Fates tour. We're going to be going to Europe, starting there for about 3 or 4 weeks. And when we come back from that, working on something with Saint, can't really talk about it yet because it's not, it should be confirmed, but it isn't.
Okay.
It should probably be confirmed in the next 7 days.
I'll keep a lookout for that then.
And then after that, we got to be doing, Fates is trying to get some U.S. dates in the spring, so we got to get ready for that. And Fates is also working in summer. Some European festivals in summer. Ooh, I think that's it so far.
When do you find time for yourself?
You know, when I'm not touring, I spend a lot of time at home and just try to be, you know, try to just stay low with the family, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time. Any last words?
Just thank you to the fans for all these years, you know, since day one. Been a crazy ride, up and downs. Some interesting things have gone on, but we appreciate and acknowledge that people have rode with us up and downs, taking chances, maybe pleasing some people, pissing some people off along the way. But in the end, it's been, like I said before, it's been super humbling to see the reaction through this campaign and being able to see people closer. Had no idea. So we thank you for that.
Cool. Thank you so much for your time, man.
Awesome.
Appreciate it.
You got it.
fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.